call that meeting of the Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:40 p.m. on February 23rd. And present, we have Representative Guerra, Representative Kawasaki, Vice Chair, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Representative Gaddis, Representative Edgemond, and myself, Co-Chair Thompson. We will be joined with some other members that are trying to wrap up some other things. But at today's meeting, we're going to have an overview of the Governor's February 17th budget amendments. Pat Pitney, if you'd please come up, Office of Management and Budget, and place yourself on the record and lead us through it.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm the Director for the Office of Management. Office of Management and Budget. I'm going to start today with the supplementals, and there's a spreadsheet for each one that for each packet. And it looks like this.
Okay. I think I got it.
The first item on it is emergency repair of state forest roads. Everybody on the right page?
Yellow. It's white.
The first item on is emergency repair of state forest road.
Yes. Everybody on the page? Hold on just a minute.
All right.
Are we doing the individual sheets on this? I'm looking at repair of state forest road system.
So it would be in this particular packet?
Yeah.
And then it's the spreadsheet behind it.
Okay.
Hmm? No, I'm talking about the supplementals. So we're starting on supplementals. And the first sheet in that particular packet looks like that.
Right here, Dan. This is the cover on it. And yeah, right here is the emergency repair. We've been joined by Representative Munoz. Ms. Pitney, go right ahead.
We're starting with the supplementals, and I'm on line four. The first item is for natural resources, and it's $896,000 to repair the road at the Tanana Valley State Forest. Due to the rain last summer, the road has become increasingly impassable, and the Department of Natural Resources earns about $250,000 a year from the products in that forest, and there's many wood uses and community aspects of that, of being able to use the wood products in Tanana Valley Forest. So the request came in on multiple occasions. We pushed back, and they said we really have to have this funding. So that's why it's coming in at this late date. It's not that it was new. It was, isn't there another way we can do this? And we finally decided it was not.
We've been joined by Representative Guttenberg.
So the next item is line item eight, and judgments and settlements. The next line items 9 and 10, we'll take them separately. Item 9 is reappropriation from two projects for Department of Natural Resources to address their injection wells. So it used to be in their maintenance facilities, they would drop the oil down through the floor, and it was a perfectly acceptable practice. It is no longer an acceptable practice, and so they have to install these injection wells. And this would take funding from two projects, the Corps of Engineers Harbor Program. This is a program that they're not going to use the money because they got GO bond money to do the same project. And then Glen Highway repair appropriation that has been completed with additional, there will be additional repairs in that area with federal funds later, but this particular project was completed.
We have a question from Representative Sadler.
Ms. Bitney, can you tell me where in the Glen Highway the ruts are yet to be repaired, and you say they will be repaired by federal funding at a future date? Where is that?
I would have to get back to you on that. I mean, it's just within the STIP plan and the particular area, but I'll learn the I'll learn the mile numbers.
It's a long highway, but it goes right through my home.
Exactly. We've been joined by Representative Pruitt, and Representative Gaddis has a question.
Well, in answer to your question, Representative Sadler, from essentially Wasilla to Anchorage are those ruts. And we've had lots of rain, we've had little snow, and I've had people calling in that are driving in, and they're literally hydroplaning in. So those are where those ruts are.
Continue.
The next item, line item number 10, is also with Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And this is is a reappropriation of project money within the Ted Stevens Airport. Number 11 is a reappropriation for a replacement of the Callison Bay maintenance station. This was a maintenance station on Kodiak Island that burned down. And although the risk management funds are available, it's not enough to cover the full project. So this also includes reappropriation. So number 12 is a straight repeal. The AGIA program has been closed out, and there was $2.8 million available for reappropriation, or not reappropriation, but to repeal. That was how much was left in that project account when that program was closed. Number 13 and number 14. This is really to bring to your attention two appropriations made in fiscal year 15 that exceeded the revenue in those accounts and replaces those accounts with general fund to meet the level of appropriation approved by the legislature last year. And so it's just only saying if you didn't want to approve those general fund transfers into those accounts, then it'll take some time to go through and decide which projects you choose not to fund from last year and actually repeal those projects. So this just says there was a decision last year to do that, and so we assume that those projects were important. We'll just make them funds whole. And that was it for...
What was number 14 again?
Oh, okay, so 13 was off of the capital income fund, and 14 was the cruise ship tax. And actually, 14 has a little nuance. There's two accounts within the cruise passenger tax, the head tax, and then the gambling tax. And this says, instead of putting the gambling tax into the general fund, put the gambling tax into the fund that was over-appropriated. If the gambling tax isn't enough, then it'd kick into general fund to make that account whole. So, but there's a reasonable comfort that the gambling tax would be enough to cover those appropriations.
Questions from the committee? Seeing none, the next section. Representative Sadler has a question.
I'm going to ask a general question. Ms. Pitney, please explain to me the thinking behind this money not going back to the general fund and going in a separate transfer from the general fund into that. What's the thought of cutting that corner?
So last year, the legislature appropriated several projects to use these particular funds. They appropriated more projects than there were funds available. And the cruise ship tax and the gambling tax are kind of fall under a similar account. And so the cruise ship tax does not go to the general fund, but the gambling tax does. So we're saying instead of running the gambling tax to the general fund, backfill this particular shortfall. So, and it was only to correct an error from last session that if we don't correct, has to have some project repeals.
All right. Mm-hmm. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to go back to the Kodiak, Cordova, Soldovia, and basically where you had indicated that there was a maintenance station that was destroyed, and I forget if you said it was burned down or not. But either way, I guess my bigger question is, and it kind of goes to some other questions that I've heard asked around in regards to our risk management, and specifically self-insured, not self-insured, but can you explain essentially how you have a facility that is damaged beyond repair, so you need to have a new one, and how we either make this mistake or how it happens so we don't do it again? Or make me understand how we'll do it again.
I'll use an example that I think is correct, but if I'm in error, I will get back to you within the next couple of days. So a facility, we have 2,500 facilities on the state books, and facilities are assigned a replacement value. And if that replacement value is based on the facility as it exists, not the facility you would want if you started from scratch. So the replacement value would be undervalued to what you would want to put up.
Did I explain it? Representative Gaddis has a follow-up.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that related to my question. So, you know, sometimes when we're in tough times, we don't get to build what we want. And I struggle with that particular line of thinking that, you know, we're in a tough time. We don't get to build what we want but what we have the money for. And I guess that's more of a statement than a question. Thank you.
We've been joined by Representative Wilson, and Representative Guerra has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sadler asked about putting money in one fund or another. And, Pat, just to be clear, you're talking about accounts within the general fund. These are the designated fund prohibition in the Constitution isn't letting you take the money out of the general funds. These are all general funds. We could reach into any of these accounts and put any of that money into anything that we wanted, right? So you're not talking about something outside of the general fund?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Follow-up questions. Representative Wilson.
And I'm sorry for being late, Mr. Chair, but could you tell me where we are?
Well, we're at a very good transition point.
We're
perfect.
Just transitioning away from this one to
Capital. So we are on.
It's a three pager, this one?
It's a four pager. Oh, wait, no, that's operating. Hang on. It is a three pager. And the first
line is
amend HFC energy programs. Yes. So, everybody there?
Go ahead, Ms. Pitney.
So line one is for the Department of Revenue, amend HFC energy programs. And what this is, it was brought to my attention, I think, by Representative Sadler, that there was $50 million proposed in the out years for the energy programs. And I said that was an oversight and not the position of the administration, and we've reduced that out year program amount for the weather or for the energy programs. Line two does the same addresses that same out year amount as does line three. Line four was an oversight in that there was $22 million in federal funds that were available, and we did not include those federal funds in the capital budget. So line item number 5 is restoration of the homeless assistance program. This was a $8 million grant program last year. It was reduced slightly to 7.7. Again, when we put in the stripped down capital budget, this one was missed, and we needed to restore that back into the
Representative Guerra has a question on that line.
Thank you. Just two questions. Going back to the HFC money, you're talking about the out-year money, but we're not appropriating out-year money, so, and you have zeros. So if you could just explain that better. And then I was under the maybe misimpression that last year's homeless assistance program money was like $9.2 million, not $8 million. But if you could let me know.
Continue.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, there were two programs, the homeless assistance and the special needs housing, and together with this, it's 9.2, and it was $500,000 higher last year, so it was $9.7 million last year. So going back to the out year, it was only that a correction of intent, so that we were not on record saying that there was $50 million in weatherization and energy programs, when our expectation was it was going to be much smaller, so in the range of $11 million. And so it was just really was correcting the out years. We could have let it go, but we thought we would change, so it was clear what our intent was.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So maybe I'm jumping ahead, but so is it the $7.7 million and the $1.5
million?
We're coming up with close to the $9.7 million that it was last year.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Wilson. So those two homeless assistance programs add up to 9.2 versus the 9.7 last year.
And a follow-up, sir?
Follow-up.
Why is this in the capital budget, though? Because this seems to be more operating from what we received from the testimony that we received in Fairbanks, that they're using it for operating, not for capital.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it is to some degree operating. It's operating at a community grant level, though. So it's much more like a grant program, similar to how Department of Commerce has their community grant programs. It's going out to community providers. It could be in the operating budget. The nice part about having it in the capital budget is the timing isn't wrapped around the fiscal year, and it can span multiple fiscal years. And some programs are three-year grants.
Follow-up,
Representative Wilson.
And I guess what I'm looking at, I don't think Commerce would make much of a difference. I'm thinking more like Health and Social Services, because I'm not sure whether these are competitive grants or they're just grants that go to the same amount every year. But then, you know, checks and balances of, you know, how many people are being helped, you know, is the program still viable, or are these to where it's already divvied up a certain amount every year, no matter, you know, I'm just trying to figure out who checks on the programs and make sure that they're making the changes that are necessary for the community, because the capital doesn't happen.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this is AHFC has a fairly robust program that analyzes the priority of the next housing opportunity, and then the distribution of the funds to different agencies. And I think, for the most part, once a particular housing project proves itself out, they have some ongoing support, but they check on the numbers and the performance of each of the grantees. And so, if you would like, HFC could provide additional information.
That's perfect. Thank you.
There seem to be quite a few agencies that do receive these grants. I know that there's also different funding sources. Mental Health puts some in, AHFC. AHFC is the one that administrates it, though?
Correct.
Okay. Continue.
So lines 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 our fund source change from International Airport Construction Funds to International Airport Revenue Funds. And it's a fund source change in within the same airport funds. So this is airport fees. And it's allowing use of the revenue funds versus the construction funds. So it's a fund source shift within that airport on the fees that they receive into the two funds.
Again, no general funds involved.
Yep.
Thank you.
So, 13. are changing. So when the Juneau Access Road and the Kinnick Arm Crossing were asked to be paused, funding off of the Department of Transportation, funding originally associated with those projects was put into an unallocated line item. This amendment changes that unallocated line item to put into the non-national highway systems pavement and bridges reconstruction and refurbishment. So it just moves that into a named line item that supports the STIP.
Ms. Chair?
Representative Pruitt.
No, I just want a little bit more clarification. So there was money that was allocated for both those projects, and we've decided we will spend the money, but we won't spend it on those two projects?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, there. So in the budget that was forwarded by the Parnell administration, those two projects were named. When the Walker administration put a pause on those two projects and submitted the stripped-down capital budget with all of the federal transportation match, that amount of money was put into an unallocated amount. So the money the state gets from transportation is based on a 90-10 match, and that, so we're just changing essentially what you said, where that money can be spent in fiscal year 16.
Follow up, Representative Pruitt.
So the only thing I just to want to clarify at this point, that wasn't initially money that was set aside for those two programs. It was, and I'm trying to make sure that I word it correctly. Initially, we hadn't indicated that this money would go towards those programs, and now we're just kind of making a shift because we put the pause. This isn't setting us back in moving forward on those two projects. It's money that we would have had this year to distribute as we felt needed. The Parnell administration chose to put it in those two projects. We've just decided that instead of those two projects, we'll put it into other places. It's not moving us backwards on those two projects. Does that you get kind of where my thought processes are on this?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, it does slow the progress of those projects in fiscal year 16. It doesn't mean that in fiscal year 17 those couldn't be named projects again if that's the determined the direct if that's the determined direction. But it does slow the progress in fiscal year 16.
Follow up, Representative Bruin.
I think I'll yield to my colleague from the Wasilla area, since
Representative Sadler and then Representative Gaddis.
Then I would simply ask for the chair, Ms. Pitney, has the administration evaluated what the effect is of this delay of pulling money back from those two projects and what the long-term consequences are for their success? And if you've considered them, what are they?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we are still in active analysis on those projects. The the intent on the Juneau Access Road is to get to a record of decision, at which the funding currently available for that project gets us to that record of decision. On the Kinnick Arm Crossing, there is funding in the project at this point, but that particular project is still on hold and being continuing to be evaluated.
Could I ask a
follow-up, Representative Sadler?
Is any money being expended for that active continuing evaluation?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the money is the money, the staff time of the Department of Transportation Commissioner and myself and Chief of Staff.
Not money specifically set aside for those projects, but just to kind of absorb the other duties.
Correct.
Can you tell me what's the most recent activity concerning the evaluation of the Kinnick Arm Bridge crossing?
Through the chair, the Commissioner of Transportation has been spending a tremendous amount of time on that and going through the documents that exist, has presented actually to the Transportation Committee of this body, and we can follow up with more information if you'd like.
Yes, I would like to know what the most recent work is.
Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I'm sorry that you know you're in this enviable position, but I can hear you very carefully trying to answer the question, and I can appreciate that. But that being said, my challenge is, if we're not exactly sure and the commissioner of DOT is still going through these documents, is it wise for us to make that fund change at this time when it sounds as if we're not exactly sure where we're at on those projects as far as if we take the money out? And I guess two things. That one question, and were these specific federal funds that were allocated for these specific projects? And will we have to pay them back?
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis. So the federal funds are determined by state priorities. Where the federal funds are determined by state priorities. And so the funds can move to what the priorities decided upon collectively. So this allows programming of those funds in fiscal year 16. The evaluation is taken into account whether or not there would have to be payback, and on both of these particular projects it's been determined that they do not. At the Kinnick Arm Bridge we have 10 to 20 years, and I think it's 20, and I can get the exact answer, to continue on the project before we'd be liable for those funds. Because it's already at a particular point where you have significant time to continue onto the project. So
we've been joined by co-chair Representative Newman. Follow-up, Representative
Gaddis. And I guess I'll follow up. I could go on probably all day, but you know there are many the records of decision, the EIS, that cannot last 20 years. So you know there are some things that you're looking for on the Juneau Road. A record of decision that the Kinnick Arm Crossing certainly has already received. That being said, I don't think there are 20 years. I don't think we have 20 years in that regard. So I don't want to go on and on in this conversation, but I think, as Representative Sadler indicated, we could use some more information. Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Pat. Can monies that are allocated to the National Highway System to projects within the NHS area of work, can those monies be redirected to non-highway system projects, as is indicated in this amendment? I was under the impression that monies that were allocated or intended for National Highway System work cannot just so simply be reallocated.
So through the chair, Representative Munoz, I think I'd rather get back to you on that because I don't know that I have all the right words, but it is my impression that it is based on the state's priorities, and this falls well within those the range of priorities that these federal funds can be used for. The specifics of your question I'm unclear on, and I think if I can get back to you, that'd be great.
That, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That would be helpful. My understanding is the $70 million was allocated to those two projects, and that in order to be reallocated, they have to be reallocated to project-ready NHS projects. And here is it's indicated that that is not completely the case. So if you could get clarity on that point, that would be helpful.
So that actually helped. Through the chair, Representative Munoz, this funding was never allocated to those projects because it's this bill that sets those priorities. And so when the first capital budget was submitted, it was submitted as unallocated, and this pushes it into a project line item that is on the priority list. The priority list is longer than there is money to allow for changes and the ability to utilize the full federal funding.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. On this, two questions. The first one's on the National Highway money and the allocation. So the way I understand it works, in anticipation of that money coming in for a specific project, the STIP list has been amended, and I think it's Amendment 11 or 12. In anticipation of this project, the Juneau Highway project, that other projects have been moved way down the list, moved in way out years. So moved to 16, moved to 17, moved off of the list. So an analysis of the STIP list, not just in my neighborhood, but around the state, very projects all over the state. So in anticipation of this money coming in, they've amended the STIP, which is the State Transportation Improvement Project List, and lots of other projects which were slated for next year or the year after that have been moved off of the list. Could we request an analysis of that from the department? What's changed because of all of this federal highway money going, instead of being allocated around the state, allocated to specific projects? And then we can get into it later as far as – but on the other – on the initial airport revenue bonds being changed allocation to construction bonds, did the sideboards change? Do the requirements and the things that they're designed to do shift, and the specifications of what how the money is used on specific projects change because – the funding source has been moved from one fund to another?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, could you re-ask that question?
So take line 12. International airport revenue bonds become international airport construction fund. These things have different sideboards on which you could use them for. Maybe you could use it for the airport building in one fund, and the other fund you could use it for the runway. I don't know. But do those sideboards change when the funding mechanisms change?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I can get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just going back to Representative Pruitt's question, Pat, just so we understand it, because it's not 100% clear, but the move of the $70 million, you're not reallocating money that was allocated in prior years. You're just coming up with this year's budget and changing what the prior governor had put in his sort of placeholder budget and saying this is where we're going to use the money this year, but you're not reappropriating money from prior years. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, that is correct. And it was never attached to these projects because the only capital budget was put in was a very stripped down capital budget that didn't include anything.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
So when we're looking at this, and what considerations do you feel were given to the fact that a lot of these capital projects are for infrastructure projects, around the state, and it's my understanding right now we have around $4 billion that'll last about 3 years for major projects within the state. Some of these projects are scheduled to come in years 4, 5, and 6 so that we have some jobs in our communities. I had ICER do some work, Gunnar Knapp from ICER do some work on reductions in the budget. And for capital budget reductions, it was around 950 jobs for every $100 million in reductions. I think we're going to see some substantial reductions in the operating budget this year, which will account for some quite a few jobs. But if we get in the years 4, 5, and 6, if we don't have jobs in our communities doing infrastructure projects, if there's not money, and I don't know what the allocations are for here, that would have a pretty detrimental effect on our communities, which would raise, obviously, Department of Public Safety, corrections, HESS budgets, cause them to skyrocket, I would think. We all know what happens when people lose their jobs and turn to maybe drugs and alcohol, and the bad things that can happen when people are intoxicated on drugs and alcohol. So my concern is, did the department look at cause and effect on how much capital budget we have now, years 4, 5, and 6 and beyond, to ensure that we have a stable economy when you looked at how or when you're looking at these projects?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, one of the key criteria of the budget submitted this year was stabilizing, is moderating the spending reduction to assure we had have a stable economy. So it was a step down. It did maximize the federal capital funding in as much as possible. And that was the first capital budget we submitted was, you know, strictly just federal funding leverage budget. So we did look to maximize as much as possible the external capital funding, but also realize that it's the place that has the quickest response time to reduced overall state budget. So this is a very, very thin capital budget. It's likely anticipated it'll be relatively thin in the coming years, with the added amount for the homeless grant program through HFC. In total, it's about under $200 million, of which $35 million is through reappropriation. So, still just over $150 million in net state funding for the capital budget. The future state capital budgets are going to be fairly limited as well, understanding that, we might have to go through public-private partnerships or external resources. If a project doesn't have a revenue potential behind it, it's going to be very hard to make those investments from the administration standpoint. Project priorities from the legislature certainly be well considered within the administration.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat, I believe the money for Alaska Housing, those projects are 100% federal pass-through funds, I believe is what we heard from Mr. Butcher the other day. So that really doesn't affect our capital budget if we accept those federal funds and move them through there. We're just moving federal funds. Also, because Alaska is the United States Federal Highway Department considers Alaska a net positive state, to where the taxes that we pay and fuel costs when we buy fuel, we get more back for STIP projects than what we actually pay in. So instead of a 10-to-1 ratio on our dollars, it's likely we can be seeing 12, 13, 14, 15-to-1 on those match projects, which I think is exceptional that we have the opportunities to be able to take advantage of those types of funds to build infrastructure. Did you analyze those projects?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Newman, I'm unclear of the potential for a 1 to 12 or 13 match. That would be spectacular. I'm under the impression it's 90.
Positive, I think.
Yeah, I'm under the impression it's a 90-10 match, but that would be fabulous. On the housing program, there were two pieces to the housing program. One is 22 million of federal pass-through, and the other is 9.2 million for homeless assistance that is state-funded.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We've been joined by Representative Chenault, and he's back out. Representative Sadler.
Catch and release.
Catch and release. He thought we were being resolution.
Ms. Pitney, just for the sake of the folks back home watching or listening or going to read about this, I'm going to give you the opportunity to offer some clarity. What is the Walker administration's intentions regarding the Kinnick Arm Crossing and the Juneau Access Project? And if the answer is to continue studying them, can you tell me how long you intend to study them, and if that's just to study them until they're no longer viable, or what conclusion you reach and what time frame?
So through the chair, Representative Sadler, the Juneau Access Road, our intent is to go to record of decision. The funding available for the project gets us to the record of decision, and at that point, make a decision. We have time without delaying the project because we have to get to record of decision.
And about how long will that take?
I believe the record of decision is sometime this time next year.
Okay.
But I'll double check that. It's a ways off yet.
Okay.
The Kinnick Arm Crossing, the interest rate now is to get the EIS complete, or get as much value from the work we've done to date so we don't lose any of the value of getting to EIS, and we have a starting off point. But the EIS is the next major piece on the Kinnick Arm Crossing, and I think that's even more time-consuming than...
So you anticipate that will happen after, or more than a year from now?
I believe so, yes. Okay. I think there's many components to that EIS.
So your best estimate as to how long you continue to pursue until you achieve the EIS is when?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'd have to get back to that.
Okay. And then follow-up last time.
Follow-up.
And then at that point, what's your intentions?
The EIS is critical to the intention.
So you intend to proceed?
Well, if we get it, there's an opportunity to. The time frame of proceeding would be another question.
So you can't answer that question now if you proceed or not. Okay. Clarity.
On that point, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the point of the Kinnick Arm Crossing, I believe that the current funding mechanism that is in place now that was passed in House Bill 23 last year now allows for a total cost to the state, further cost to the state to move on that project is $5 million. The rest of the money will become out of revenue for the match grants for the STIP, but right now the cost to the state for capital is $5 million to finish that project. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions from the committee? It's okay. We're down to line 16, I believe.
That line 16 is ADAC Airport Maintenance and Operation, and this was another federal pass-through that was overlooked in the first time through that needed to be corrected. And then on line 17, that is just a project listing update, additional information than the previous capital budget included. So it's a priority list of projects.
Any further questions on the capital amendments? Seeing none, next.
So we are on the operating amendments, and that has four pages.
Four? How many?
Four. Page one of four. And the first line item on it is restore funding for named recipient grants, Alaska Native Arts Marketing.
Sister?
That's the top sheet. Yeah. That's the cover page.
And that's the one before is right here. Everybody have it? Continue, Ms. Pitney.
So line item one is through reallocation, restoring the funding for the grant for Alaska Native Arts Marketing. This is in the same Commerce and Community and Economic Development component as tourism and seafood marketing. And so this was the only program within that component that was entirely eliminated. The request is to have one more year to be able to then move into a more privatized approach for that of the Alaska Native Arts Marketing. And again, it's through reallocation from tourism and seafood marketing, which are lines two and three. Lines.
Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you. So to put a fine point, so you're saying this $300,000 would be for the final year of this marketing program? Is that what I heard you say?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the Department of Commerce had hoped that they were ready to privatize this year, and the reason it came in late was they said we need one more year to make it a successful privatization. So
this would be the last year of state support and passed off to private. Is that correct?
That's the intent. If it comes in, it might be coming in at a slightly lower amount or a largely lower amount. But that's the intent, is to see it privatized.
Follow up,
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. So it's possible to come back in FY17 for additional funds. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it's possible.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, it's possible.
Yes, it's possible.
I just want to make sure. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So why is this not an OTI? One-time increment, so it comes back up to us next year. It doesn't end up in the base and we forget about it.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm just learning those little caveats. So.
Okay, and follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
Maybe I missed it. And how long has this funding been, how long has this project been going?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think more than 8 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, yeah, is this part of the Silver Hands program that I believe that members are already paying to?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I'm not sure I can follow up with that.
I think Representative Edgman is shaking us.
We can call a friend. Representative Munoz.
Mr. Chairman, I believe this is a grant that goes to promote cottage industries around the fur industry and native crops, and I believe it's directed to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is involved in the grant.
Do you know how long it's been going on?
I believe it's around 5 years, 4 to 5 years.
Okay. Continue, Ms. Pitney.
Line item number four is partially restoring the regional and community jails program. That program was in 2011 about $6.5 million. In 2015, it was $10.5 million. This restores it, but reduces that amount. This allows Department of Corrections to renegotiate the community jails contracts to be more based on the usage that they need for those communities, and to address any transportation impact for public safety.
Okay. Continue.
Lines five and six are, this is an accounting an accounting need to have interagency receipts and post-secondary receipts assigned. It's a reporting for post-secondary that makes separation and transparency of their accounts. It's no funding change. It's just, in essence, actually a double counting through interagency receipts.
Chair.
Representative Guttenberg has a question.
Yeah, thank you. So do you have any, Pitney, do you have any idea how much of actual student loan money or interest is being used for this, or is being transferred part of the interagency receipts? I mean, I know some of that is always part of the administration of any program, but some of us have a significant issue with the high cost of student loans. And
so
it looks like you're prepared. So.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, this has nothing to do with the cost of doing business or the number of loans or the interest rate on the student loans. This is setting up a separate account so the post-secondary receipts show all up in one account, and there's an interagency receipts for those post-secondary receipts to come across. It's merely an accounting exercise so that you capture all of the post-secondary receipts and all of the spending within post-secondary on those. There's no, it's a net zero impact in terms of cost. Regarding your question, I can follow up with how much is going into the administration and the loan totals and the loan volume over time.
Yeah, thank you, Mitch. Just to follow up.
Follow up.
I can understand it's a net zero, you know, and but there's also what part of those funds are being used for this would still not, if some of those funds were being used, it could still be a net zero.
Through the chair, Representative Gunn, there is no difference in use of funds because of this accounting exercise.
I understand that. Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to the reduction in the tourism activities and marketing activities. The amount that you're restoring for the arts and crafts marketing is taken from tourism and seafood marketing. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, yes, it is.
Okay. And what is the balance then now, as of today, for tourism marketing and ASME marketing?
So for tourism marketing, it's $18.7 million. And for seafood marketing, it's $23.9 million, or really $24 million.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I was under the impression that tourism marketing last year was approved at $16 million. And maybe I'm mistaken, but it looks like we're actually increasing, not decreasing.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, that's total funds. So of the 18, 16-something be general, unrestricted general funds. So these are total university or unrestricted general funds as well as other funds that are coming into that account.
Okay. So if I may, the state's portion now is at what roughly? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay,
split out.
Mr. Chairman, if I could get the numbers on tourism as well as seafood marketing,
absolutely,
that would be great.
We'll
thank
get
you.
That to you.
Thank you.
It might be in this here.
Didn't find it.
Okay. Continue, Ms. Pitney.
Okay. I'm on page 2. Line 7. So line 7 is an additional decrement for reform on the Medicaid program. So with through discussions with Health and Social Services in looking at what additional reforms that they can do beyond the cost shifts that we will have from expansion, this $20 million decrement is the components that are expected from Medicaid reform.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I heard, this has kind of been what's been bad. We keep hearing reform and expansion blended together. So on this $20 million, does this come from just reform within the division and will not take any expansion for the savings?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there are components in this reform that require a waiver from the federal Center for Medical Services or Medicaid Services. The waivers have a higher success possibility if the state chooses to go to expansion. So, but this is based on the existing population. So this is the cost savings that we could achieve, assuming the waiver. Some of those are waiver dependent. That means that the federal government has to approve them. And assuming the waiver works, we would be able to have the savings. Some of the waivers are anticipated. Approval of the waivers may require the state to move towards expansion.
So, Mr. Chair, I would like to, and I think this is more to you than it is necessarily to Ms. Pitney, is I'd like to have the division of how they come up with that $20 million and which portions of that may take expansion, how much takes regulation to make the waivers, and just really divide it. Because my other concern is, and I don't know whether Ms. Pitney is going to go over the lawsuits that are in the back of one of our presentations, but a lot of those have to do with the waiver system that we currently have, and I want to make sure that we don't have more lawsuits that we're just throwing money into the legal system versus actually helping people. So the division of the $20 million would be very helpful.
Co-Chair Newman and I are looking into this and kind of trying to figure out some things so we can get back to you with an answer.
Thank you.
Sure.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Briefly, I just want to make sure and clarify what Ms. Pitney said. You said that there are components that require waivers. In your words, the waivers have higher success. I'm not quite sure what you mean by have higher success. Do you mean a higher reimbursement rate, higher FMAP, or more like a higher likelihood of being approved by CMS? What did you mean?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, higher likelihood of being approved.
Higher likelihood of being approved, okay.
Lines 8 and 9 are both for the same purpose. With the zeroing out of the general fund for aerospace operations, they've requested that their aerospace receipts be increased so they have the opportunity to earn additional funding through their privatization or their efforts in working with industry. Lines 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 go together. And this is an internal reallocation in the Department of Transportation to restore the ferry service. This would be a one-time reduction in the highways, each region of the highways to restore one time the ferry service due to the reduction. And this would allow the people who have tickets on the ferry system to continue to be able to utilize those with uninterrupted schedules. It is the intent that this is a one-time reallocation on the ferry system, not a multi-year.
Ms. Pitney, this $6.29 million, it reduces highways and airports by that amount, but it's an unallocated amount that I'm very curious as to how that is going to play out as far as where it fits. My understanding also is that the number of reservations we have on this replacement of putting the ferries back in is only about $70,000 worth of revenue that's going to cost us I think it's 3.5 plus 2.7 of it is the fuel trigger, which doesn't even affect anything because it doesn't go into effect until $70 a barrel oil or higher. So I'm a little confused on this allocation, reallocation that's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Representative Thompson, the fuel trigger funding was eliminated, and you're right, it wouldn't go into effect until it was $70 barrel oil, but the fuel prices haven't come down commensurate to the loss in funding from the fuel trigger mechanism. So the cost savings are below the savings that the price of fuel is allowing. The revenue reduction from the loss of the fuel trigger is more than the cost savings that Marine Highways will have due to the based on the price of fuel. Price of fuel hasn't come down as quickly as the price of a barrel of oil, unfortunately. So that accounts for some of it. And the other is whether you have the ferry schedule was posted in October. This one-time restoration is the ferry schedule that we post next October will be a less robust schedule to accommodate a reduction.
I don't think we're eliminating services completely, and I would think for $300 worth of long-distance phone calls, we could call these people that have reservations and tell them, you know, that ferry reservation that you have on Monday, such and such, that one's been canceled. You'll have to take the Wednesday. I don't think we're going to lose revenue out of it. I mean, I get a little concerned with this allocation of transferring the money and taking it away from highways and airports. So it's a little confusing. And just a statement. Rep. Wilson, you had a question?
I do. So first of all, I'd like to know the justification between why one service is more important than the other. The northern region, it's hard enough for us for our roads because we call the Hull Road is counted in our region, which takes a lot of the resources that we have. So what was the justification that for a year that any of these areas could go without these funds?
It was the intent that it's a one-year item, and it would be slightly less maintenance, and if we had another snow year similar to ours that we're having this year, you could actually make it through. That and so it was that it couldn't be forever because the roads are very important as well, but that it could be handled on a 1 year so we could honor the schedule that was put out in October.
Follow up,
Representative Wilson.
I don't know if you've been up the Hull Road lately, but we're getting complaints already that it's pretty dangerous because we're not having enough maintenance as it is. And if you count in those savings, the brine that you've been using in Fairbanks, which I hear is coming to Anchorage soon, that's not a savings for our vehicles. It might be a savings for the state, but it's not for us. And I just think when you take from one area to another, I mean, you're making choices and prioritizing. And I think already when it comes to at least the Hull Road, which is our lifeline to the oil fields, going a year or delaying any kind of maintenance when it's already so far behind, I'm not too sure is the message we want to send. But I think some of the savings that we have right now are not, they may be savings to the state, but they're truly not savings to our residents and to our boroughs and all their vehicles that go with that. So, well, I'm sure, well, The chair of that, of the Department of Transportation, will probably handle it from here. Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. I agree that, you know, it's difficult to take from one area to another. Obviously, I agree with the statement. But keeping in mind that the Marine Highway is the highway system in coastal Alaska in many of our communities, and it is how people are connected to the urban centers. So, you know, anything we can do to maintain or support ferry system activities is vital to a portion of our state. I'm wondering if, Pat, if you've looked at shoreside operations. I know the shoreside side of the Marine Highway operation has grown a great deal in the last 10 to 15 years. Have you looked at possibly looking for efficiencies on the shoreside operation so that we don't have to cut so drastically to the actual service of the ferry system?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I can follow up with Department of Transportation on what their operation savings are.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Through the chair, through the miracle of non-modern television, I was able to watch this when I had stepped out. I heard Representative Munoz's questions on on the tourism marketing question. I just had a question there. My understanding from what I saw in the prior document was that there's going to be $12.5 million of general fund funding. And so you're showing $18 million, and so that must be $6 million of federal match. And I guess if you could just let us know how the federal match works, if we lose federal match as we move the state portion up and down, it would be useful to know, unless you know that now.
Chair, I can follow up. I don't know it, but I'll follow up.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, sir. Regarding the ferry reallocations, I'm just curious to know, is there any way of knowing how many of the reservations that were made and which it's the desire not to disrupt, how many of those were Alaska residents and how many were visitors? Is it possible to know that?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'm sure it is, and I can find it out.
We'll get that to you when we receive it.
And if I could telegraph my next question, I guess, would be, are there any penalties associated, any financial penalties associated with not honoring those reservations other than the presumed inconvenience and frustration of people that have made reservations? Is there any cash penalty involved with that?
Representative Thompson, through the chair, Representative Sadler, I, to my knowledge, there are no penalties.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just, from the perspective of this central region, what is the almost $2 million there? What are we, how are we going to see that cost savings? Are we, there are certain roads that won't be repaired? We're going to, less maintenance of snow? I mean, how will I see that impact in the central region?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, it would be less. Less road clearing, less pothole maintenance, less, you know, the cutting along the edges. It's not that it would go away. There would just be less, one-time less capacity.
Okay, so just to make sure that I clear up. So in general, it's just less services to my community will be removed, and then we'll place that into the Marine Highway System.
Representative Thomas. Through the chair, Representative Pruitt. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't mean to beat the ferry system up, but, you know, I got to tell you, I worked for the airlines for a long time, and we would change a schedule, and our passengers flipped over to the next schedule, and it wasn't that big of a deal, and it's almost embarrassing. I mean, this doesn't hold water as why we would continue this ferry schedule just because some folks are scheduled on it. So I would ask that, Mr. Chair, that maybe we would look at it real tightly. Thank you.
Just as a point of clarification, we are looking at it. The reduction of the $6.2 million in the governor's original budget, the way they measure ferry service is that $6.2 million reduced 39 weeks of ferry service. I don't know how they figure that. But we went back and looked, and in 2007, 2008, there were 74 weeks of ferry service added. So I feel like we've got to take a look at how much service, where does it actually, you know, where are we benefiting and where are we not benefiting? So we will be looking at that. Further questions on that subject? Next, Ms. Pitney.
So the next line item, number 17, this is one I don't expect this group to be very comfortable with, but it is the administration's request for flexibility language. Okay. It allows for a 5% transfer within a department, 5% unrestricted general fund transfer within a department, and a 2% transfer across departments. The depth of the reductions are going to be very difficult. There's going to be unintended consequences having the flexibility to move within departments and across departments to address items with significant sideboards is a flexibility that the administration is requesting. It is certainly the prerogative of this body, but we're going to have to take drastic cuts, and being able to address the unintended consequences, this would provide us that ability.
Co-Chair Newman, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat, we have a percentage here, but we don't see a dollar number. What do you expect this dollar number to be?
Well, for instance, if there was a $100 million general fund budget, 2% would be $2 million. So, you know, something like, it's $114 million roughly is what the highway portion of DOT is, give or take. So 5% of that would be just over $5 million, for instance. So that would be the magnitude. So it just depends on what the amount of funding is within the appropriation that's being discussed. So take a smaller appropriation, something like DMVA, you know, in the $25 million range or $30 million range, or then it's much smaller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what I was trying to get to is I believe there was $10 million mentioned.
There was.
That was that the governor was requesting to be put into his budget to plug holes, I think was what it described, because of unknown circumstances of the amount of reductions that we're going to be forced to do this year. Is that basically what we're saying here?
Given the reception that $10 million of unallocated funding had, this is a backup flexibility approach.
So that was a yes, I think.
That's a yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vettenberg and then Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the budget exercise we're going through right now, clearly the governor is going to need a lot of ability to manage these accounts. And I think last year we heard the Hess commissioner talk about the department can only work because of his flexibility to balance numbers and shift things around on a temporary basis. And I know any administration has a certain amount of flexibility on moving money around. It needs to happen. Are we adding to that, or are you that flexibility, or are you just saying these are the numbers flat? So no more money than this would be appropriate at a given time or over a period of time?
So through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, it's the administration's preference that the $10 million remains available, and that would be over and above in individual appropriations. But this particular ability to transfer is not additional money. So whatever the appropriation level is, it's just within different appropriations. But it's moving across appropriations, both within a department and across departments.
So if I
follow up.
So there's some assumptions that have been made in this building at different times about the administration's ability to do things, not being able to transfer things across departments or keep things in allocations. So is this expanding that authority to be able to do that?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, yes, it does expand the authority, and it raises it to the appropriation level.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, to start off, just want to make sure that 15 and 16 weren't missed, that we do go back and cover those. Yeah, thank you. I figured that was just in the day-to-day jobs, things we miss over. But I do want to ask a little bit more. How do we have an assurance that items that this legislature has chosen to not support, which is you know, the appropriations process that we're going through, I mean, how do we have an assurance that because of the desire of the administration, money won't be moved from something that the legislature might find to be important, but the administration doesn't, to something that vice versa the administration finds to be important the legislature has chosen not to go forward on. That's the whole purpose of the appropriations process, is to make sure that we're directing, and the governor decides if he agrees with that, and he can veto and bring it down. But at this point, it almost seems like there's, for lack of a better term, we're giving him a blank check. Here's the amount. You can put it to whatever you feel like. How do we have that assurance that it won't go to stuff that the legislature has decided we don't want it to go towards?
So through the chair, Representative Pruitt, there's fairly tight sideboards of a 2% limit and a 5% limit, and it has to be with the assumption that we are here for Alaskans, and we have the best interest of Alaskans in mind, and that it's available to address those things that through this process are heard to be important. And if you get into a situation where you're doing things that have unintended consequences, that you have the ability to address them. So you can't guarantee that a decision would be made, but it's with the assumption that we're all in it for the best interest of Alaskans.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up, Representative Pruitt.
I think we all agree that we're here in the best interest. We're all going to have to live within the new world that we live in, and that means less money. But I think one of the co-chairs has mentioned in the past one of his challenges in the previous administration, where there were items that the legislature found was not something we wanted to continue, and somehow they found money to fill that in. And we didn't like that. And this almost seems like you're asking for us to give you that authority to continue to do that. And we didn't like it then. I don't think we're going to like it now. And the idea that if we have decided that money shouldn't go somewhere, that there's that opportunity. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but unfortunately, there's history of it happening. And that's where my concern with this comes from, is we've seen in the past where that's happened.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I think our budget situation is very different in a significant downturn versus an ever-increasing budget over the last 15 years. And the choices, the decisions, the personnel actions that are going to have to be made because of the reductions being discussed and being passed out of this body are going to they're going to be felt, and this allows for a timely resolution when it's going beyond the intent of both the legislature and the administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pitney, my understanding is the administration does have broad authority already to transfer money across allocations. There's the supplemental budget as a way to address unanticipated. You can ask for RPLs from us. I was going to ask you, why isn't that authority sufficient, but I'm going to back off of that and just say, how did you arrive at 5% and 2%? Why not 10% or 4%? If flexibility is good, more flexibility would be even better. How did you arrive at that number, those numbers?
So through the chair, Representative Sadler, actually operating in fairly large organizations, you know, 1% and 2% changes correct a lot of missteps. And so it's leaving across departments very, very slim at the 2% level, and then within departments slightly higher at a 5% level. So keeping that level as minimal as possible, but still creating flexibility. The other piece is we looked at what other states are doing, and not every state has this flexibility, but there are several states that do. And this was roughly in the range of their capacity, but those states that did allow for it. This is in that range, but, you know, 2% corrects a lot of misstep.
Follow up?
you can tell the word that comes to mind is usurpation, but and you in telegraph that you thought we would not be real receptive to that, and I think it's fair to say you're correct.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'm open to something more creative, but Ms. Pitney, I understand your reluctance to wait for a supplemental next year because supplementals tend not to pass till almost close to the end of the session, and so now we're talking about a year from now before you could do anything. So I don't know if folks have better ideas to help Ms. Pitney, but we're making large budget cuts, and I think they're trying to come up with a way to address mistakes without waiting a year, and that's what doing it through the supplemental would do. Comment, I guess.
A statement. All right. Further questions? I think that Representative Pruitt wanted us to go back and cover items 15 and 16.
Thank you very much. So between the amendments or the endorsed budget and this set of amendments, the university had settled on their UAFT bargaining, and that contract would the monetary terms of that contract are $1.5 million, of which $754,000 is general fund. That's line 15. Line 16 was supposed to read, to meet the administration's target for the university, this is an additional reduction in general fund, so essentially it would offset and have zero general funds. It was not to reduce the general fund portion of that contract. It was to reduce the university's allocation by that amount. So the net effect is to include the appropriation of $1.5 million for the negotiated contract, but reduce the university's overall allocation to meet the governor's target amount. So that was the intent of those two lines.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm assuming then we should be looking at them coming back, at least on this contract, as, you know, I mean, 2% every year. And in the time that we are, it's just private business isn't getting that. So I was actually hoping you were sending a message that we weren't going to accept the $754,000 these times, and they, as other agencies, would have to find it from within their own. Because as you notice, it's the only one that has come back asking for the money. So why wouldn't you tell the university that they need to go and find it from within? I mean, they can negotiate anything they want to. But when they're negotiating, in my opinion, they should be negotiating based on their current income, not what they could potentially get. So I'm curious why the other offset versus just saying we're not going to allow this.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, so all state and university negotiated contracts go through the legislature. Mm-hmm. And each negotiated contract is addressed in the language section of the operating bill that says this appropriation covers the cost of the negotiated contract for this particular collective bargaining unit. So if that language is in there and it is requested, then all negotiated contracts that have gone through the legislature have to be paid, have to be honored. If the legislature takes that section and says the appropriation here does not include funding for the collective bargaining units, the university and the state are not allowed to pay those provisions of those contracts. So, in fact, the only way that the state and the university can pay the provisions of the contract is if it's specifically addressed in the operating language.
Follow-up,
Representative Wilson.
That's not true. I mean, they can actually go from within and say, you know, if we're going to give 2% each year, then we're not going to be able to have as many staff. I mean, that's a possibility. They may not want to go that way, but to say that we have to do it, I don't think is really the clear intent. Because my concern here is it's not just this 2%, but now they have negotiated 2% every year, and I'm not exactly sure how this $900 lump sum payment goes into effect and for whom it does, so what the total cost is. So that's really what I'm concerned is that at a time when we don't have any money to okay this and say we're fine with negotiating this increase, I think it's the wrong message.
So is there a question there? I mean, are you?
Well, Ms. Pitney said that we had to accept this, and I guess my question, I want to challenge that we don't have to accept it. We could tell the university or the departments, which we do on a normal basis, that they can negotiate what they want, but the departments may have less people because it's higher than what we can afford. So I just want to make sure it's clear that we're not mandated to do that.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is true. The specific funding amount is there's two pieces. There's the amount appropriated, and you have full prerogative to fund whatever amount you choose. If the language in the operating bill says this appropriation covers the provisions for these collective bargaining units, then indeed those provisions must be paid. So it doesn't. So it's a bit separate from the money. The amount of appropriations includes the amount for these collective bargaining units. We honor those agreements. So you have to pay. So if the language says this covers the provisions of these bargaining units, then the state and the university must pay based on those collective bargaining units. So you can choose not to. You could say there's this amount of funding, and oh, by the way, it doesn't include those provisions. This body appropriates the amount of money, and that language says whether or not it covers the provisions of the collective bargaining unit.
Follow up. I think I have it, but just
follow up, Representative Wilson.
So we could okay the provisions of the contract and still keep the funding level at the same, then the adjustments on how many employees would then be upon the university to determine based on how much we fund. So I agree that when the contract comes in, we okay the contract itself at no real cost at this point because it's determined on how many employees there are. So we okay the contract and the percentages, but then it can still go back to what the university to say, now figure out how many people you can have if we don't give this additional funding to go with it.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct.
And one last thing, I just want to make sure on the 700, Mr. Chair. So on this one, this that happens to be pretty much the same figure, and I'm sorry I missed that because I just thought you were doing the other. This is just an unallocated cut for the university to determine where to take it from.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, to bring the university unrestricted general fund to the governor's original target.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to clarify, so this change proposes a 2% raise in the FY16 fiscal year, a 0.5% increase in the base in FY17, a 2% increase on that, and then in FY18, another 2% increase on top of that, plus a $900 lump sum per person per year. When were these contracts negotiated? Were they before oil prices fell or after?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I believe the contract negotiation started about this time last year and just completed between the time the endorsed budget went in and this amendment.
Which would be December-ish?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the endorsed budget, so they were finalized after the oil price drop.
Okay. All right. Further questions? Representative Gaddis.
Well, I apologize because I don't think this is going to be a question, but I'm stunned that at a time that we know that we're cutting back and we're cutting back all over, that I'm appalled that we would have raises to certain areas where other people are cutting back and people are losing their jobs. And so I guess it's more of a statement than anything else. I think this sends a really, really poor message. I certainly know in my budgets, it's something that we've talked about. We don't have the money to give raises. And when folks are looking at losing their jobs, the last thing that I'm going to be part of is giving raises in this time period. So, again, it was more of a statement, and I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Pat, go ahead. We're down to line 18, I believe.
Line 8. Oh, man, I was going to miss another one. The just a note, since, you know, given the general demeanor over that particular contract, there's the master mates contract that will also, there will be a amendment coming forward on the master mates that had just been signed, and that one also has increases associated with it. And we'll get those specifics to you as soon as we can get them together. That just came in over the weekend. And that would be with the Marine Highway System. So.
We're on line 18, $5 million allocation.
Can I ask?
Representative Pruitt.
Does that have to come before us? Or is that all set? They're getting the raises.
That, through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that does come before this body, and then it would be included in the operating budget as a provision of one of the negotiating units.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up?
Follow up, Representative Pruitt.
Has the administration had discussions with people that were $3.5 billion in the hole? We've got to be talking to people here. We don't have money. I mean, and everyone's got to play a part in this. I mean, the fact that we've got one here, we've got more coming, that means I'm going to have to go to my constituents. Say, are you willing to give people raises? Because we're going to have to take it out of your pocket.
I think I got on the wrong line.
And that's, I hope that the administration is having those discussions with people out there, because we've got to have a reality check for Alaskans. On this, that's difficult to hear. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Co-Chair Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat, maybe I'm reading something wrong here, but I'm on line 18, page 3, and it talks about a response fund assumes the department received a settlement for a site in Antioch for approximately $5 million. Is that
correct?
Like for SPAR, or that's what I kind of spill prevention and redundant.
So through the chair, Representative Newman, so this $5 million, we anticipate a settlement coming through at $5 million. If the timing of that settlement doesn't come in time, then it would impact the ability for the SPAR fund, the department to operate, because they used the SPAR funds in 2016. And so this is just says if that settlement, the settlement will come in. It's whether or not it comes in time for the FY16 budget. We anticipate it coming in the spring, but if it came in after July 1, then the way the rules work, that settlement funding wouldn't be available for use until 2017.
Yeah, I guess my confusion started when I thought we were in line 18 and we got discussion about contracts.
And we got into marine contracts all of a sudden there.
Because of the
others. Well, I like to share bad news early.
Yeah.
Or good news, depending on which, you know, where you're. But given the tenor of the group, I wanted to bring that forward so there wasn't any surprises.
Good, thank you. So let's talk about the spill response.
Spill response.
We would have, I think, preferred the administration to introduce some legislation. We knew the Department of Environmental Conservation, who oversees this fund or goes through their department, that fund was going to run out last year, that there's not enough money. There's not enough flow of oil through the Trans-Alaska pipeline and things like that to cover the cost now that we see. Do you feel that it's any of the department's duties to try and assure that these funds are there, requests through legislation, or what's your plan?
So through the chair, Representative Newman, it is our plan to introduce an agreed-upon legislation that could pass that would fix this. This is just in case it
Thank you.
Doesn't raise to the passing level this year.
All right.
So we have only two.
We're getting close to the end.
Two lines left. And they're both fairly easy. Number 19 and number 20, there's updated projections available, and every, you know, when we put amendments in, we try to keep the, our projections updated, and this is the amount of money that it's updating the amount of money projected from the permanent fund earn that would go into the permanent fund earnings. So it's just based on a correction, you know, we project what the market is going to do. It's coming in a little bit lower than what it has, what it was originally projected, and that was, that's the $3 million and the $11
million. Those are the only two nice numbers in this whole thing.
I don't know. It's going the other way. The market isn't producing as well.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, one thing that I haven't heard discussed yet is there's other agencies that don't fall under the governor's purview under the budget amendment, or not the budget amendment, the like ADA, Permanent Fund Corporation. You know, they're just kind of a standalone corporation. Has there been any request to any of these departments to reduce their budgets as we move along? I mean, every other state department is being asked to reduce, and I know that it doesn't affect some of the budget things that you're looking at here, but can you talk about that and why or why not these agencies have either been asked to reduce or haven't asked to reduce? I haven't seen anything about them.
So through the chair, Representative Newman, each of those units were requested to participate in the exercise on the scenarios. We were looking for cost efficiencies, not necessarily revenue reductions, because they are our revenue generating area. What we were looking for, operating efficiencies, or where those units could offset the operating costs of other units. And so the offset, for example, on the permanent fund is division. So there could be a reduction of positions, but then we'd have to contract out more, and our positions have a much higher return on investment than when we contract out with management firms because of the cost of the management firms. So there's a kind of a trade-off. So you could reduce positions, but you'd actually end up spending more in their budgets. But we asked each of them to go through that. Not, I would have to go back and look and find out which pieces we've accepted on those, but they were all participating.
I think you get that. I guess the Budget Control Act, I think, mm-hmm. what I was talking about. I'm trying to remember the name of the world of acronyms we live in. Mm-hmm. So if we could get that. And another question, Mr. Chair. Concerning the railroad has a very large facility, a train depot that was built several years ago in the middle of the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Do they pay fees to the airport for the property there, like everybody else who leases property from the airport for those funds? And that's a huge building that's going unused. Is there any plans that you're aware of to do something with that? I mean, the state's taken a tremendous loss there, the way I see it, with that huge building doing nothing. We continue to pay insurance and heat, other costs on that. They rent it out for some weddings once in a while, and things like that, I understand, but that's a pretty big issue, I think. I mean, what discussions have been going on within the administration on that?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I can follow up with you on. I'm not aware of the conversations on that topic.
So, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, right now, there's no plan to change the operations that you're aware of, so we'll just keep covering the costs and. I guess that comes out of Ted Stevens International's budget because they have their kind of a closed cell budget.
Yeah. Through the chair, I think it's an excellent question, and I just don't know the status.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry if I missed it, but the lawsuits that are all listed, in the back here, and I don't have a question on any specific one, but I'd just like to know what is being put in place so that we don't get sued again. So, I mean, if there's some kind of update that could be given to the chair on what changes that we have made, because I know the waiver system is something utilized by a lot, and I just noticed that being one of them, but I'd like to know what changes we're making so that the lawsuits don't happen anymore, and do we have any more out there on those specific issues that are already settled here?
Through the chair, I will follow up.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. One more, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Ms. Pitney, I'm looking on page 2 of the operating line 7, which is the Medicaid cost containment initiatives. There is some detail on page 7 of the yellow sheet, but I guess I'd like to ask some more questions, maybe get back to me. How is the figure arrived at $1 million savings in GF for durable medical equipment? I guess I'm curious to know what the total amount spent is for DME in Medicaid. And I just would appreciate any more information about these and what the timeline of implementation might be. There is some reference here to the necessity to meet narrow timelines, but just curious to find out what the department would presume, how quickly the department would presume to meet, to put these cost containment measures in place.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I will follow up, but for sure by to collect the savings in fiscal year 16, since the budget would be reduced.
And for the, and I would say for the record, they have been fairly good about getting these answers back, so I appreciate the quick turnaround they provide.
All right. Representative Van Neumann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat, there's some other issues within the operating budget where the governor forward-funded the education fund at only 90%. It looks like there's a, some people may assume that there's an approximately $126 million that was a savings or a reduction from the budget this year. But we're actually going to have to pay that next year. So it's really not a budget reduction. Unless somebody was to introduce legislation to change the funding formula for the BSA and such, and then you'd have to start from ground zero anyhow, which would include those monies. Is there any intention from the administration to try and clarify that at all so that the public understands more clearly where the budget sits?
Through the chair, Representative Neumann, it's the position of the administration that in a year like this, we didn't want to forward fund the whole amount. It's our understanding that there are groups looking, and there was a law passed last session to look at the formula funds. There's been requests for proposals that have gone out for the studies to be available in the summer, and we would like to have the education funding discussion for fiscal year 17 and the fiscal year 7 in the next year during the session, and given the funding environment, didn't feel that like we were in a position to fully fund the full amount at this time. And that does not mean that the full amount wouldn't be funded on the formula as part of the governor's FY17 budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the assumption that a lot of the school districts are having, because the money that was removed that was outside the funding formula that was added last year, obviously, I don't think, and I haven't done any surveys or asked other legislators, but we were looking at about $105 oil when that passed. And so the money that was outside the formula was added in there. I think legislators probably, I don't know if they would or not, have put that money in there if they knew oil was going to be $50 or not. But I think one thing that the school districts do depend on, because their budget cycle doesn't line up with the state's, is the certainty of why we created that legislation to start with, that it was to allow school districts to not have to put out pink slips because they're not aware of what their budget is going to be. And there's a lot of angst within the education community now because of the loss of money outside the funding formula. And I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on the legislature to try and either increase that or adjust that so that they can see. Again, I kind of refer to it as ghost money. It's money that's we're going to have to pay either this year or next year unless legislation is introduced. On another issue, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
We've got other appropriations within the operating budget, such as in corrections, a $4.1 million decrement because the expansion of Medicaid is expected to reduce their costs. There's some in health and social services also. It makes it somewhat difficult to try and do a true budget if we're looking at the corrections budget, which is going to have a difficult time. They've taken some pretty heavy reductions this year, and I think with these overall reductions, the workload on Department of Public Safety and corrections is going to increase with job losses. I mean, that's a proven statistic. So I believe those numbers came out of the third report that I've seen, one called the Evergreen Report, that was done on Medicaid expansion. There was, again, so I'm trying to figure out the best way to put together a budget on anticipated funds or decrements that we're putting into operating budgets, departments of their operating budgets, with expected money that was based on the third report that we received on Medicaid expansion. If we were to allow those to go forward like that without plugging those holes, per se, with UGF right now, if that didn't move forward, those departments would have some pretty big decrements that they may not be able to handle. I'm trying to find an answer here, Pat, on the best way to do that when we look at accounting and how we're supposed to create a budget on money that we haven't got yet or we don't know if we're going to get. And for me, it would be more prudent to try and have more clarity in the budget so that the public understands. Is there, can you give me some comfort somewhere that this money's going to happen or how it's going to happen and what we can see? And I think you can see the confusion that I'm trying to get. As an accountant or somebody who does a lot of that money that you don't know, again, it's more ghost money.
So through the chair, Representative Newman, the budget proposal the administration put in includes Medicaid expansion. If there is, if that budget is approved, there is savings and corrections of over $4 million. If this body chooses not to go with Medicaid expansion, it would be the administration's hope, but it's certainly your action, be the administration's hope that the decrements that we took based on Medicaid expansion would be restored. But it is the administration's position that that we are proposing Medicaid expansion, and that Medicaid expansion allows for savings and corrections in health and social services and behavioral health programs, and those offsets due to expansion are included. It's up to this organization to make the choice on Medicaid expansion or not. And it's also up to this body to decide to restore those decrements or to force the administration to work with them. And if they're not restored, boy, please, please provide that flexibility that was proposed in the amendments.
And, Mr. Chair?
You bet.
The issue, you know, and that we have asked the administration to propose a separate piece of legislation because we have to approve this operating budget within the next couple of weeks of time frame, and we really don't have any information. There's been no committee discussion. There's no public discussion. There's been absolutely no information besides a report that says some things about expansion. There's nothing about reform, some Medicaid reform that would maybe look at healthcare costs, different waivers, programs. There's a lot of things that probably should be fixed within the Medicaid system, or some people think that there should be. Again, that's the angst I think that we're having right now between the legislature and the administration, is you're asking us to accept $145 million in this operating budget without knowing where it's going, without knowing about the program, which is a huge policy issue. It's probably the biggest policy issue that we're facing in the state right now. Can you give me some comfort on what we're going to see coming forward, or some information on how this budget, this body right here, would feel comfortable about accepting $145 million that we don't even know how it's going to get spent?
So, through the chair, Representative Newman, the Department of Health and Social Services have provided several presentations in hearings through Health and Social Service, or through the Health Committee, and they would be very happy to discuss the entire plan here. I would be very happy to discuss the whole plan here. It would be, I would have Commissioner Davidson sitting right next to me. It is a policy call. It is a policy call that this administration has put into the operating budget, and so this administration stands ready to present in as many committees as you would like on how this budget is working and what is included vis-a-vis Medicaid. And there have been several hearings to date. I can get a list of all of them so that you know which members have had the opportunity to sit through the presentation, and we can have several more of those presentations to provide that level of comfort.
And, Mr. Chair, the problem that I have with that is, you know, as an appropriating body, we can either accept those funds, not accept those funds, amend those funds. We can put in sideboards that we are assured of if the funding drops below 90% of the federal level, that the state will back out. But we have nothing that guarantees that besides a committee coming to us and telling us that. And that's the angst that not just myself but the people that I represent are having with this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. So, Ms. Pitney, I sure appreciate you being here today and being beat up on and answering hard questions. I see your staff has taken several pages of notes with questions to answer. If you could get those answers to Representative Newman, he'll make sure we get them out to all the members. So thank you very much for being here. Finance Committee will meet again tomorrow, Tuesday, February 24th, right here in this room, 519 at 1:30 p.m. At that time, we'll have a confirmation hearing for the Department of Revenue Commissioner Designee Randall Hoffbeck, and we'll also be hearing House Bill 26, Extend Certified Direct Entry Midwives Board. And with that, at 3:35 p.m., we are adjourned.